TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg.
Good save, Pavlik, rebound.
Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets. A division of Bell Media. TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. And now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live at www.tsn1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my good friends, Ezra Ginsberg to the left of me, Richard Pollock to his left, Timmy from across the board. Gentlemen, good afternoon. How are you?
Drew, you got a little cocky, I see.
Actually, I was going to say I was slumming it with you guys, but I decided to take the high road, but now I'm not going to take the high road.
And Three days on the morning show, and we're secondary for you.
That's right. I'm back to slumming it with you two yutzes.
We're just waiting until you let us know when you're going to leave Legal Curve and join another show full-time. But you did a great job. I listened to you a little bit. I think I listened to you for about maybe 30 seconds.
And that
30 seconds was some of the best radio I've ever heard, so... I'm sure Troy was able to handle you. I know that he was happy that he only had to work with you for 3 days. But no, in all seriousness, you did a great job, Drew. But, you know, this is our home here. Saturdays, Illegal Curve.
That's why I wrap up every show by saying, if it's Saturday, it's Illegal Curve Hockey.
Not you know show. That. You've been switching it up right. lately.
No, I'm thinking back to that. I blatantly stole that from Meet the Press on NBC. So they were, you know, threatening, you know, a couple lawsuits here and there, but I think I settled them down, so we should be okay. Nothing? Just dead silence from, you know, both of you guys? You're just throwing me right under the bus there, eh? Just letting me run, yeah, okay, good.
No, you threw yourself under the bus.
Well, you guys could have, you know, backed me up, you could have supported me, you could have maybe snickered or laughed at my attempted humor, but no, nothing, eh?
Under it all, Drew, we want you gone.
fair enough, but until then, you're stuck with me, and let's get right into it. The Boston Bruins Winnipeg Jets game last night at MTS Center. Probably the most important game to date for the Jets last night. It was an opportunity for them to A, win back-to-back games for the first time this year, and B, to get rid of the aftermath, the stink of that home ice defeat to the Isles on Tuesday night. And the Jets withstood the opening flurry of the game in which they were outplayed for the first, you know, 10 to 15 minutes. And then from then on, they really took the game to the Boston Bruins and prevailed by a 4-2 with a 4-2 victory.
Yeah, guys, and the first period was a pretty difficult period to watch. The Jets, like you mentioned, were badly outplayed, badly outshot. I believe it was 13-4 in that first period. And the shots maybe are a little bit misleading. The Jets weren't actually that bad. When you see 13-4, you really think it's that bad. But the rest of the game, the Jets played pretty well. And the thing that I like most about this team, and this isn't from a fan, this is from the way the team is developing, is the way that they're responding in these third periods. When the Jets were winning all those games in December at home, most of them were with games where they had the lead and they kept the lead.
Yeah.
And now the Jets are starting to come from behind and win. And in this game, the Jets didn't come from behind, but the Jets had a good third period.
Well, what happened? I mean, what was
interesting? The third period to have a good third period like that is crucial. I mean, we had a little bit of an issue with Claude Noel going back to Andrew Ladd, Blake Wheeler, and Brian Little because we thought, you know, Evander Kane should be on that line. And Noel is sticking with that line, and it did do well. Except for the goal that Blake Wheeler scored, Brian Little scored, which was from when Evander Kane was on the ice. But for the most part, they played very well, and they've won two games in a row now, and I've already conceded this, Drew, and I told you we were talking about our early season predictions, and you know it's famous that I was the only one that predicted the Jets would make the playoffs, and I'm still conceding.
Hang on. Famous? Famous?
I'm still famous. I'm still conceding that the Jets are a long shot. They're still probably around 12-15% as far as their chances go on a statistical website, but they're still a long shot. But it's nice to see as the team's developing, they're getting wins. They're having strong third periods. They're putting some wins together. And it impressed me the way they've put these last two wins together, because against the Wild, that game could have gone either way.
Well, I think we're forgetting one thing here, guys. They scored 7 goals,
mm-hmm.
and then the shootout winner, so that's 8. That's the key. The key isn't a bunch of editing. And there are they haven't had trouble, for the most part, aside from a couple of games, one against Detroit, one against Pittsburgh, one against Philly, playing defensive hockey. They just can't score. Lately, they've been scoring, and that's obviously the key to victory to me. I mean, you score three goals and then get a shootout winner in Minnesota. You come back and you score four goals against Boston. Now, last night's win was a huge win. I thought the team fed off the crowd. I thought they got terrific goaltending from Andre Pavlik. And I thought that they're, for the most part, you know, their players, best players came to play, especially, I thought, Blake Wheeler. Blake Wheeler was terrific.
Yeah.
And he's been terrific for the most part for the last 2 months of the season, really, if not longer than that.
Yep.
And I thought that was a key, and defensively they locked it down, especially without Zach Bogosian. We can't not mention the fact that they've won two games in a row without Bogosian. And last night was more important without Bogosian than against Minnesota, because Minnesota, when they came in here the first time, we were saying they're overrated. And Minnesota stinks. Like, they're not any good.
They don't have any offense whatsoever.
No offense. So Bogosian's loss there isn't as significant as it is here. Against Boston, a team that can roll out three, four lines, although they do miss Horton and Peverly, and we'll talk about that. But yeah. I thought last night's win, there's many reasons to be to feel good about yourself if you're the Jets.
I think the best reason to feel good about the Jets is, and we're going to dedicate a lot of this show, pretty much from the 1 o'clock hour on, we're going to pretty much dedicate the rest of the show to sort of a preview of the trade deadline, which is coming up on Monday, February 27th. But for a Jets fan, I mean, feel good about the win last night. But what I think you feel about even better is all the guys who really contributed to that win.
Yep.
Are your future. It's Wheeler, it's Kane, it's Burmistrov, it's Little, it's Ladd. Those were the five, you know, best forwards for the Jets, and those are the guys that you have under contract and are going to be a part of this team going forward for a lot of years.
Best scoring forwards. I mean, the GST line goes out there again.
Right.
I'm talking about the
guys who put the puck in the net.
Right, and you're talking about also the guys that prevent the goals. Now, I mean, there's two sides, and I understand your point, Drew, and it's well taken. But that's also a factor, and it looks like, by all accounts, Tim Campbell saying that Kevin Cheveldayoff told him he hasn't been negotiating any of these guys. I would assume at this point that the Jets are going to trade Slater and Glass. They're both, they're not going to get anything for Glass, but they'll get a fourth round pick probably.
Yeah.
Slater, they can get, I think, what San Jose gave up for
Dominic Moore.
I think they're very similar players. Left-handed shooting, can play third line center, can kill penalties, can win faceoffs.
And we'll get deeper into the trade deadline and the possibility who's buying, who's selling later on in the program. But I mean, you look at the last two games. You look at Thursday in Minnesota, and you look at Friday, and you look at Friday in Winnipeg against Boston. You know, the first goal in Minnesota is Blake Wheeler coming down the ice with that head of speed on the right wing, going around the net, you know, shielding the puck with his body and firing a great pass to Evander Kane, who's right by the goal, right by the net, putting it in the back of the net.
Yep.
Then you got Burmistrov scoring. Then you got, and I mean, these are the guys that, you know, going forward for the next 3, 4, 5 years are going to be the guys that are going to need to put the puck in the net for this team. And seeing them do it back-to-back, you know, against two teams that have, you know, for the most part, Minnesota's very good, you know, very defensively sound.
Claude's also finally giving these guys opportunities to succeed.
Well, it just, I mean, that's the part that's really mind-boggling. You see what Burmistrov's done these last 2 days, playing in a more expanded role with other scorers.
Playing it for 3 months.
Exactly. And he's performing. I mean, you know, look at his first goal yesterday. His first goal wasn't the hardest shot in the world,
but it was a
well placed shot in which
should have been stopped.
But it
wasn't even over the glove; it was over the shoulder. Rask has to have that, but he puts the puck on net.
Right,
that's what I like.
I mean, Rask said, you know, it was a difficult. He wasn't sure how to handle the shot, which I mean, to some extent, is a credit to the shot itself. You know, if the goalie knows, oh, it's an easy glove save, but you know, Burmistrov puts it in a spot where Rask doesn't know whether to hit it with the shoulder or how to defend it. There's something to be said for the future stepping up as they have in the last few games.
Right. Evander Kane had arguably his best game of the year, and I tweeted this, and I thought Burmistrov had one of the strongest games of the year, and they both have an extra spring in their step. And you're right. That is what we should be looking at now. We shouldn't be so fixated on the playoffs, because that's, like we said, it's a long shot at this point. They're going to have to win 80% of their games to have a good shot.
Yeah.
And it's going to be tough. I'm not saying we can go over the schedule at some point today, and we were before the show. And we
did that when you were in Montreal.
Right, and the seven games that are coming up at home, they could win five of them.
Well, when we were planning the show this afternoon, you know, we were just meeting and planning and talking about the show, we looked through the next seven-game schedule. And the Jets, I mean, the hardest game on this homestand was the game last night against Boston.
Yeah. Philly also will be difficult.
They've beaten Boston once this year.
Twice.
Well, twice now.
Twice now.
Once coming into last night. They have the opportunity to sweep Philly on Tuesday, so you know that they can beat them.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, I mean, look, it's good. This next seven games are key, and we expect, you know, to have a realistic shot at the playoffs. It's going to probably take 6 out of 7 wins, yep. Which, I mean, if they play the
we
way
did this already, I mean, we
I know
did the
we did all the numbers and yep. everything. You're right, but you know, the way they played last night, the way they played Thursday night in Minnesota, is a good sign for the future, if not even for the rest of this year, but for next year and going forward.
And that's what counts most importantly, because this team isn't very good right now. You want to see the building blocks take the team not only play well, but obviously ascend to certain talent levels that allow right. you to build around them. And that's the thing is, I mean, I don't know. We've analyzed what these players are. I think personally, Evander Kane is a top-line left winger in the National Hockey League.
Yep.
I think Alexander Bromistrov is probably a second-line center in the National
yep.
Hockey League. I don't
yep.
see
I'd agree with that.
I don't see first line. I see second line.
Yep.
There's nothing wrong with that. You need top six guys.
Right.
Blake Wheeler, I've been saying all year, to me, is a second-line right winger. Is he taking a step to first line or not? I can't yet make that determination, but he's more so the first than the second right now.
It seems so long ago, the beginning of the year, where Blake Wheeler, I mean, how many games did he go without scoring, and he was relatively inconsequential?
Yep.
He really has taken on an extra leadership role on this team in the last 6 to 8 weeks.
And he's a player who yep. plays on confidence. I mean, that's I mean, don't get me wrong, I think most players play on confidence, but some guys just can't shake. He gets shaken pretty, you know, I think pretty significantly.
He can get rattled, yeah.
Yeah, he gets rattled, and I think you're seeing him now, he's completely in the zone, and make no mistake about it, Brian Little scores 2 goals last night. People talk about Brian Little.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one puck comes to Brian Little by a play that Andrew Ladd was trying to shoot. It popped out to Little. He scored. The other one was just a beautiful pass by Wheeler. So Little's playing okay. Don't love Little. But Wheeler's driving the bus on that line. And Ladd has been kind of a passenger on the bus, to be honest.
Yeah.
But Wheeler's been driving the bus, and there's nothing but good things to say about him.
Oh, the play that stands out to me about Blake Wheeler is the sequence in the third period where he lays a good body check. Chris Kelly. He lays a good body check on Chris Kelly. Chris Kelly's mad, charges him, and Wheeler hits him again and knocks him down, and Kelly goes to the box.
Right. Yep.
I mean, that sequence, I wasn't in the press box with you guys. I was in my seats last night. The crowd... The crowd that was around me rose to their feet in appreciation for the effort and impact.
We rose to our feet knowing that you weren't going to be in the press box.
Right.
No, but Drew, you know what? You make a good point. And we were watching the Blake Wheeler goal that he scored for the University of Minnesota against North Dakota. He's a passionate guy. He's not, when he was describing himself to some of the media who weren't familiar with him, Blake Wheeler was a high draft pick of the Coyotes, and he's been a good player, and he's still relatively young, I believe still 25 years old.
Yeah.
And, you know, he signed to the 2-year contract, and, you know, this is a passionate guy. He's a passionate hockey player, and he is driving the bus. I think that is an accurate statement, and, you know, whether he's a first-liner or a second-liner, I mean, that's up to people that want to debate that. But
he's a top-sixer.
Yeah, and I think the point is that he's had a very good season. And, I almost can say that I'm proud of Blake Wheeler because he came into Winnipeg. Everyone knew that Andrew Ladd had 2 Stanley Cups and was the offensive leader and going to be the heart and soul of the team, you know, along with other players. But Blake Wheeler took a lot of flack because he struggled at the beginning of the season. And now he's developed, and I really commend him for that. He's a talented guy. He was always talented. And he's really stepped up, and he's the leading scorer on the Jets, and I think he deserves a lot of credit for you know, driving this team, and he's been individually a very good player on that line, and him and Kane, we'll see if they go back together, but you know, whatever line he's playing on, he's got the job done.
No argument whatsoever. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to look back and more on the Jets week in review. Much more to still to come. The trade deadline preview show. We're with you till 3 o'clock today. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the program. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. David is a lifelong Winnipegger who has the passion, skill, and expertise to help you with your real estate needs. Call David Carr of Monopoly Realty at 230-6129. That's David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129.
Drew, I can confirm we were hanging out with David Carr after the game. We were at a restaurant in the River Heights area, and he confirmed to me that he doesn't accept Monopoly money. So if you do call him, he prefers you to either write a check or use real money. So there's a little bit of confusion there, and I might have started that, but just because he works for a Monopoly Realty, that's actually a real realtor here, and you do have to pay him in real Canadian currency, tender. so you cannot pay him in Monopoly money. Continue on.
I'm so thankful that next week's show is at 7 a.m. because we know there's no chance you're going to be there on time.
Absolutely.
I'll be there. I'll put my name on the line.
You put your name on the line last time, and you didn't show up on time.
Why don't we make a bet?
My word is bond.
Why don't we
My
make
word
a bet?
Is bond.
Why don't we have a little wager, friendly wager for next week?
For charity?
Yeah.
Maybe we'll, yeah. How about that? If Ezzy doesn't show up on time.
Okay, all right.
If Ezzy
right,
doesn't
like
show
this.
Up on.
Okay.
If
yeah.
Ezzy doesn't show up on time for next Saturday's program, 7 a.m. we're going to start, you have to give $50 to a local charity. And if you do show up, Richard and I will give $25 to that local charity in your name.
How about this?
Richie, are you on board with that?
Absolutely.
I think we should give $50 to a charity regardless.
Well, we're going to do that regardless.
Okay. Okay, so we'll give money to charity regardless. Okay, I like
it. If you're
it.
Here
like
on it. Time, Richie and I each give $25 to a local charity.
Okay.
If you're not here on time, you give $50 to a local charity.
I accept. I think that's a great idea, but because
I'll tell you what, and if anybody wants to match our offers and wager one way or the other,
yes.
Send us your tweets at Illegal Curve or send us an email, info@illegalcurve.com, and we'll add you to this bet.
And the charity is not the Human Fund.
It's not the Human Fund. It will be a legitimate Canadian charity in which you will receive a tax receipt. So there it is. If you're here on time, Richard and I will give $25 each. If you're not here on time, it's going to cost you $50.
I will take it one step further.
No, you don't have to take it any further than that.
He always does. What is it, Ez?
I am so confident that I will be here at 7 o'clock because I know my best friend Richard Pollock is going to make sure that I wake up, unlike last time when he pretended that he tried.
Absolutely not. He did call and BBMU. I was there to see it.
But I had my phone on silent.
Not his fault.
Richard should have made sure that my phone was on vibrator ringing. That's up to him. It's like Seinfeld and Jean-Paul. But I'm going to take it one step further. You remember the famous Jay Richardson, Troy Westwood, Matt Leibel bet from the NFL playoffs.
Unfortunately, the panties are still up on the wall here.
Right. I will wear all five of those pairs of undergarments.
If you're not here.
For the entire show next week, if I'm not here by 7 o'clock.
Sign me up.
I'll wear all five of those. You can take pictures. You can do anything you want. I'm so confident. It's not going to happen because I'm going to be here. Those are going to stay on the wall. I'm going to be here, and we're going to give $50 to a local charity because I'm going to be here. And the only reason I wasn't here is because I had my alarm set to Montreal time, and Richard didn't reset my clock, and he should have woken me up.
There you go. If it's any consolation, Ezzy, Hustler has tweeted at us already, and he has no faith in you whatsoever. Well, there you go.
My mom texted me. She said she doesn't think you're going to show on time.
The bet is made. The bet is on the record. You've heard it live here on TSN 1290, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll keep you updated on the progress of the bet all week. If you want to contribute, tweet us at Illegal Curve.
To the Ezra Fund.
It's not to the Ezra Fund. It'll be to a legitimate Canada Revenue Agency charity.
Well, I was going to say we could give the money to the True North Foundation.
Well, we'll decide on the charity afterwards, and we'll go from there. How about that?
We'll make our own decision.
What about Tim? Do you think I'm going to make it here?
Yeah, I do, actually.
Tim's on my side.
Tim thinks you're going to make it.
Okay, well, there you have it. Let's talk about...
Tim's just being nice to me.
Let's continue talking about the Jets' week that was. It started off really disappointing loss Tuesday night against the Islanders, where you had legitimate questions about the mental makeup of this team after that game.
Yeah.
And I think they've sort of, well, at least temporarily, because, you know the peaks and valleys all season long. They answered those on Thursday by continuing to come back after being down to the Minnesota Wild. And then I think they sort of affirmed the answer on Friday with the defeat of the Boston Bruins.
Those were two. Go, Richie, I'll let you just go. I'll jump in here. I just wanted to say that those, as I cut you off, I guess, those two losses were discouraging. And when we were on the air after our show last week, there was obviously the 8-5 Pittsburgh loss. And it was pretty bad because the reason Claude Noel lost it after the Islanders lost, and that was when he said his famous line, do I look discouraged? And he was upset. And he as a coach, he should be. He's a passionate guy, and the Jets have really bounced back nicely here, and they do have a shot. But it's really about the culture of the team to me. Now they've at least shown that they haven't laid down and died. And the Jets, they're getting excellent goaltending, and they're getting some lucky goals, and they're getting some wins in overtime. But hey, they're starting to score some goals, and some of the guys that have struggled are starting to put the puck in the net, the Littles and the Burmistrovs.
Perspective is a funny thing, though, Ezzy. I mean, if the Jets come in and beat the Islanders like they're supposed to, beat Minnesota like they're probably supposed to, and lose to Boston, the people's perspective and optimism changes significantly, even though at the end of the day they get 4 to 6 points regardless.
Yep.
So I think that's something to take into account, too. Don't get me wrong, I'm not discounting last night's win, but I'll tell you what, the fans were into it yesterday and the Jets fed off that, but the Jets were up for the big game against Boston. The worrisome part to me is the Jets haven't been up to play Florida and haven't been up to play the Islanders.
Yeah.
They haven't showed the same. You can't tell me that that team's played as hard or with as much passion against those teams, of which those games are equally, if not more important, because those are the teams they are competing with for the playoffs.
Right.
And then they come up against Boston, they have these huge performances, but where is that the rest of the time? Right. And that's a question in terms of the medal, and that's what Claude Noel says. You know, he said yesterday, well, we know how good we can play. Well, I don't know, Claude, because everybody gets up to play the Stanley Cup champions.
It's easy to play against the original six teams.
Where do you come when the game, it's a Tuesday in the middle of February, we talk about this in the summer all the time.
You're playing the Islanders.
You're playing the Islanders, and you need the games, because 2 points is 2 points, and you come out and you throw it a dud like that.
And the thing is, in the standings and on the ice, you're not really much better than the Islanders. I mean, the Islanders have some talented forwards. You could argue that you know, right now, the only guy that might make the top line of the Islanders is Evander Kane. I mean, the P.A. Parenteau, Matt Molson, John Tavares line is one of the top producing lines in hockey. Unfortunately, Drew, their other three lines don't do anything. But
Okposo's playing on the top line now. Parenteau's playing second line when he's here. Yep. But and just for the past recent time.
I don't know why you'd break that up. That was doing very well. Okposo's, I guess, more of the future of your team. But Parenteau's done a pretty good job. 51 points.
Still scored on the second line that game.
Yeah, I mean, they have been playing to their you can't blame the fans. I don't want to even go there. Sorry, I apologize for that. Started off a bad thought there. But the team, you're right. They when they played the Islanders, they had no emotion whatsoever.
Nothing. Right.
And that is I think that's a leadership issue, you know, in the dressing room, that the leader of the team, whoever he may be, must have a good enough pulse on the team that he knows that they're not going to necessarily get up for that game, and he has to take it upon himself to make sure that they're up for that game.
This is why I've never been a big fan. This is not really Andrew Ladd's fault, because they made him the captain. Mm-hmm. But that's my problem with the captain being a guy who, at the end of the day, really can't take over a game. Because you can say all you want, but if he can't do it, it limits, and to me, your captaincy value. It really does.
Yeah.
And because if you can't take over the game, if you can't say, we got to win this one, boys, we got to go, we got to get this one, right? Yeah. And your Yzerman, or your Gretzky, or your Messier, you can take over the game. You have that ability. And the problem is when you have a guy who's not that as capable and not able to do that, he says all these things, and then at the end of the day, he hasn't done anything else than any other guys on the team. And then I'm not saying he's a bad leader,
right,
but I'm saying his leadership ability, to me, is capped off. I've never understood when teams make third line or second line guys captain, unless you've really gone through the wars. I mean, Andrew Ladd's gone through the wars, but he hasn't gone through the wars as a top two-line player.
You're talking about the famous one is Messier as the captain of the Rangers, guaranteeing the victory and then backing it up with the hat trick.
Right.
Exactly. Against the Devils in Game 6.
And it's that type, and again, there aren't many Mark Messiers,
if
any anymore, but it's the point. The point is, can the player who's the leader take over the game? And to me, if he can't, it really does limit his ability. Because he says, you know, you saw Ladd after the game, we need to pick up our game, we need to be better, blah, blah, blah. Well, he hasn't been any better. And the team, whether the team looks at him or the fans look at him, there's a limitation, I think, on his ability to lead.
Well, this gets back to the old debate with the scene. I always found it weird. You know, we're talking about the captain, and I really like Andrew Ladd's game, and I think that we all knew a lot about Andrew Ladd before he came here. When Andrew Ladd came from Atlanta as the captain, you know, we have some of the young players we weren't too sure about, but we knew about Andrew Ladd and his two cups. Andrew Ladd won a cup when he was super young, 20 years old, I believe, 19 or 20 years old with Carolina, and then he won it in 2010 with Chicago. But if you go back, Andrew Ladd was a huge part of that Stanley Cup win, but not as a top-line player, playing with Davey Boland. And I think he only had maybe 6 or 7 points, if I'm not mistaken, during that cup run, but he was a key support player, a key guy that played as a guy you could put in there, and he would forecheck, and he would get those gritty goals with Dave Boland, if you remember. And at least I knew that. And when Andrew Ladd came in, I think people were not expecting too much of him, and I think people get a little bit too fixated on, How many points will this guy get? Will he get 60 points or will he get 70 points? Well, the point is, he's not going to be Jonathan Taves, and he's probably not going to get 2 goals every game or whatever you want to say.
He's not both of those.
But he's a guy that will go in there, and he's a hard worker, and he will get goals, and he does lead the Jets in game-winning goals. He's got 4 game-winning goals. But I think that's expectations.
That's flawed, but
And I mean, if you can give the C to a guy like Mark Stewart or give the C to a Buff or somebody else, and maybe that takes off some expectations, or give it to a guy that has the ability to maybe take over the game. I think sometimes that the C, people look at the C too much, because there's 20 other guys on the team, and there's usually a good group of 4, 5, 6 guys that are the nucleus leadership of the team. And on this team, you throw in a Mark Stewart, you throw in a Dustin Byfuglien, you throw in an Enstrom, you throw in a Hainsey, the older guys.
He's the best choice on this team. This team doesn't have that type of leader. And I think they'd probably rather give the C to somebody else if they had the option of a guy, big guy coming in. You can't give it to Byfuglien because he doesn't back check when he's a defenseman. And you can't give it to Enstrom, I don't think, the leader. Stewart is that kind of a leader in the room, but he just doesn't play enough. He's a third-pairing defenseman.
Yeah.
You can't give it to him. I'm not saying the choice was bad. I'm saying the choice was limited.
That's a fair comment. They don't have that player on the team who can back it up in the dressing room and then back it up on the ice, game in, game out.
And Andrew Ladd, Andrew Ladd has won 2 cups, and you never take that away from Andrew Ladd. He's won 2 cups. But just put into context, again, with his role. I mean, he played 9 minutes in the playoffs per game when Carolina won the cup, I believe as a fourth liner with Chad LaRose, Craig Adams, and guys like that, had 5 points in 17 games. Okay, so, I mean, again, he's a cup winner. You can't take the cups away.
He was 19 or 20 at the
exactly.
time.
Exactly. I mean, it's not Jonathan Toews, so expectations need to be held in check.
Yeah.
And I think that his role is best suited to me. Andrew Ladd on a really good team is your second-line left winger wearing an A, playing some second power play time, playing significant even strength time.
Can play shorthanded too.
But you'd rather him not. And that's about it. And that's good.
Yep.
That's fine. Nothing wrong with it.
No, exactly. I mean, he might have been, like you said, he was a bit miscast, but simply because there weren't many other options.
Right. So it happens a lot of times.
Exactly. It happens. Yeah. Absolutely. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to look ahead at the week that will be for the Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show and some feedback to the bet that we just made. We'll be right back. Hulk Hogan's theme song.
Let it go, Tim. Let it go.
Let it roll.
Why are we playing the Hulk Hogan theme song?
What problem do you have with the Hulkster?
It's great, man. Random.
We're so into it.
Here's a little bit of an update in case you're just joining us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We made a bet. If Ezzy shows up on time next week for our 7 a.m. broadcast, Richard and I will donate $25 each to a charity. If he does not show up on time, Ezzy's going to give $50.
Plus,
he's going to wear the collection of underwear that's on display here in the studio. Some tweets at Illegal Curve. The Libel family, Ellen and Leah, give their support to Ezzy. They think he'll be there.
Thank you, Ellen and Leah. They're members of my extended family.
That's true.
Appreciate it.
Sabrina Carnevale, who's just
next door
to us on air.
She was just in the studio. It's surprising that she's not going to support me. Sabrina, why aren't you supporting me?
She says that you're awesome, but you might as well give the $50 up.
I'm a Sabrina.
Yeah. Constantine, good fan of the show,
our boy.
Is going to pledge $25 either way.
Constantine, I love you. Thanks. Thanks for the support.
And
is this a telethon?
And at Steam15 thinks we should donate seats to an inner-city kids group, which we would be glad to do.
If we had seats.
But we don't have seats to donate.
I don't have my own seats.
Well, I mean, definitely.
Andrew, why don't you take me to a game, by the way? You're always sitting.
Yeah, Drew, you have seats.
Why don't you pledge your own seats? You know? Actually, no, Drew was dressed up as the queen last night.
Yeah,
that was Drew.
It was not
People
me.
Don't know that. That was Drew. Her Majesty.
For the record, shout out to the Queen guy. That Queen guy was terrific.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was not me.
And they got him to do the 50-50 draw.
Also hilarious, which is great. I mean, I thought that was just really supporting of the Queen. That was very nice, you know, the support the monarchy and all that.
What about the Mounties?
The Mounties?
No, those are Buckingham Palace guards.
Yeah,
you know who said that? Rick Ralph. Shout out to Rick Ralph, who does the official pregame show. He said that they were actually Buckingham Palace guards because we couldn't see. But think about all the celebrities that we've had at the MTS Center this year. We've had Justin Bieber, Selena Gomez, Will Arnett, Pat Sajak, and Dave Minuk. So, I mean, it's been a star-studded affair.
Anyways, it's quite the star-studded affair.
Yep.
If you want to pledge some money to help us with our charity drive here, you can do that. Send us your tweets at Illegal Curve. And if you think Ezzy's going to make it, or if you don't think Ezzy's going to make it.
Drew, I've already been late twice now, and I was talking to Gary about this up in the press box yesterday. I'm not going to... You fool Gary once. I don't know what the saying is. But you fool Gary twice.
George Bush.
But you fool him 3 times. then I'm probably not ever going to be talked to again by Gary Lawson. I'm going to be here, and I'm going to be here because I've learned my lesson. Don't set your alarm to Montreal time. That's all you do. Tyler Seguin's done it. He played last night, had a decent game. I'm not going to set my alarm to Montreal time again. I'll be here.
Okay, well, there you have it. He's very confident. I think he's foolish, but he's confident. Looking ahead at the Jets' next opponent, tomorrow night, 7:30 start here on TSN 1290, Hustler and Lawless, I believe at 4 o'clock, and then Rick Ralph with the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show at 6:30. The Jets Avalanche, the Jets have already beat the Avs once this year, and there's no reason, given everything that's going on, why the Jets really shouldn't be expected to beat them again tomorrow night.
Yeah, the Avs aren't very good, Drew. I mean, they're a team, they're in the thick of it there in the Western Conference, but they're a young team that can score. They have some dangerous guys there who you know, do cause some concern for your defensive core, but overall, this is not a team that should be, the Jets should be losing to if they want to be serious about being in the playoff race.
Right. Gabriel Landeskog is going to be a heck of a hockey player. You forget some of these guys are 18 years old, and you know, Evander Kane and Alexander Burmistrov are 20 years old, and they're going to be really good hockey players, too, and yeah, Colorado is a team. This is a game that the Jets are going to have to win again. And you know, Drew, you mentioned that yesterday's game could have been one of the most important games. But the way I look at it, with the record that the Jets had in January was just awful. You know, every game has been a must-win game, and that's why you know they've got to beat the New York Islanders of the world. They've got to beat the Colorado Avalanches of the world. Those are the teams that teams beat when you make the playoffs. When your goal is 96 points. You know, and you have to win 80% of your games to get there, or roughly 80% of your games. You have to win these, and Colorado is, one of those teams that they have some young talent, but the Jets are going to be able to take advantage of a defense that is not one of the best in the NHL. Let's be nice about it. And when the Jets last played in Colorado, they won. And that was famously when they were when they were on the streak, and that's when the Jets, not maybe at that point, but they were, you know, that was another one of the games where they could call themselves the quote unquote streak killers. But you know, this is a winnable game. Colorado played last night, but I'm not sure if they play.
They're in town already.
They're in town.
They don't play tonight.
They're in town right now.
They're in Winnipeg. They're practicing at MTS Center in about 20 minutes.
Oh, sorry. What I mean, they don't play tonight. Obviously, they don't play tonight.
They didn't play last night, did they?
Yep.
I have no clue.
I don't think they did, has he?
Yeah, they played Edmonton.
Oh, you're right. I apologize. They beat Edmonton 3-1 last night.
Yeah. So Colorado,
Landeskog, I saw Landeskog's goal. I didn't see much of the game, but I saw that goal.
I'd say they can score. They can score. They're 23rd in the NHL in scoring. They have a good power play, though. But I think more importantly, what I'm talking about is the young talent that they have there, so you have to watch yourself. But the weakness of this team is their net mining isn't great.
Well, they only spent a first-round pick to
upgrade. Talk about that. Their defense is very weak. That's the weakest part of their team, their defense, and you have to take advantage of that. They have a bunch of guys who aren't really top-line guys, and the Jets are going to have to take advantage of that with their top two lines, and the top two lines playing really well yesterday. You need to continue that momentum against a team that's far weaker defensively than are the defending Stanley Cup champion Boston Bruins.
Tremendous opportunity for the Jets. Toronto plays in Vancouver tonight. You would expect that. I mean, that's obviously a very difficult game. Mm-hmm. You would expect Vancouver's going to win that game.
Take the over in that one.
Yeah, take the over, certainly. So Toronto plays in Vancouver tomorrow night. Washington plays... Washington doesn't play tomorrow. I'm appalled. I thought they were... Unless they play tonight, and I missed it here. Go on. Let me just look
big,
this up.
Big win. Big win for Washington last night.
Pardon me. Washington plays Tampa tonight. Second half of back to back. So you know, never an easy thing to do. Second half of back to back play. You know, win. So if Washington loses tonight and Vancouver loses and Toronto loses tonight and the Jets take care of business tomorrow night against Colorado,
tied for eighth.
Granted, you know, Toronto has two games in hand, but the Jets will have leapt over Washington. And they'd be tied for eighth.
So Washington will have three games in hand.
Washington will have three games in hand. Toronto will have two games in hand.
Right.
Which hurts.
Although
the Jets.
Ottawa there isn't exactly tearing up the NHL. Uh-huh. And they've played one more game than the Jets, right?
No, they played the same amount of games right now. So, okay. I mean, you're right. Ottawa there, you know, Ottawa gets to sort of be in the mirror. In the, you know, ahead of you. You can sort of see them there. But, you know, if it plays out the way it should or could, very good opportunity for the Winnipeg Jets. And really, going forward this entire week, the next seven games at home, a very good opportunity for the Jets to make some hay. But like we said, it's going to take six out of seven.
Six out of seven.
It is realistic. It's not a very,
Drew, anytime you see that's realistic is, I mean, that's six out of seven, okay, 6-1, Drew, for a team that's an five.
I think realistic is 4-3, maybe.
Well 4-3 is not going to cut it.
It's not going to cut it, but I think it's more realistic.
Well, but I mean, you look at it. It's not, the timing of the games isn't very difficult. They have a lot of time off. I mean, they play
back-to-back.
Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday,
maybe some
Saturday.
Of the Jets can donate some of that money to me coming to next weekend's show.
Yeah. Monday.
Maybe
Monday,
I can get my Thursday. Boy Chris Thorburn on board. Maybe Dave Manu can hook that up.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, we don't know what you're talking about anymore.
Back to the playoff race, though. The team that I think a lot of people would agree with that you can beat out to get in is Toronto. We were looking at the schedule, and they've got, after tonight's game in Vancouver, mm-hmm. the Maple Leafs have four home games in a row, and they've got the Devils, Sharks, Capitals, and Panthers. A minimum out of those will be three playoff teams. Minimum three of those teams will make the playoffs. Yeah. We're expecting only one from the Southeast, but if that's the team, you're not going to win the Southeast division with those teams that the games in hand are going to kill them.
I think there's a huge factor that we're not taking into account. It's a trade deadline.
Sure.
What does Toronto do?
What's the trade deadline?
What does Toronto do? Do they try and buy and get a lot better? Because we're talking
didn't the Leafs just acquire Rick Nash, James Van Riemsdyk?
Well, exactly.
Jeff Carter.
But think about this, Ezzy.
Wayne Gretzky.
We're evaluating the Jets' chances against the Leafs team without any players acquired.
Sure.
So there are now still 10 days before.
Right.
But there's nothing precluding them from making trades beforehand. But we could very well be talking about the Jets competing against the Leafs and the Capitals, whoever else may be, who end up buying at the deadline. Maybe the Jets sell. So let's not get carried away here with the chances. I mean, it could be that the Jets are dealing some talent and the other teams are acquiring some talent, and that gap that we're talking about might widen a bit.
If the Jets are 2 points out of the eighth spot or even tied for the eighth spot come Monday, February 27th, does Chevy still trade the UFA guys?
You can trade. If you're him in that situation, now I would be more aggressive probably than he will be. There's other factors there, but to me,
your job doesn't depend on it.
Rich is aggressive.
But I don't think he would trade Slater. I think everybody else would be on the market, because the truth of the matter is, a guy like Tanner Glass does a lot of good things. You could throw Patrice Cormier, for example, from the center to the wing on the left side there, to play an aggressive style forecheck. I know that there's a chemistry factor, but you play aggressive style forecheck, left-handed shot, up and down guy. You know, Glass skates better than he does.
Well, you realize that.
But hold on, just for 1 second, and then you drop him in there, and then you throw somebody in for Oduya, and you move another defenseman up. You up the ice time of the top four, right?
Yeah.
And then you throw a guy like Jones in there.
Jones has played well the last two games.
Well, you throw Jones and Stewart on a third pairing like they have, limit their ice time to 12, 14 minutes, and you really notice Odia's gone? So I don't necessarily think selling is throwing is mailing it in. Now, if you trade Jim Slater, though...
They're not trading Jim Slater.
You're mailing it in, because he's what makes the GST line go. He's huge on faceoffs, huge on penalty kill, plays against the other team's best players all the time. To me, that's the sign that you're done. But if you don't trade him and you trade some of the other guys, I think they're replaceable.
And you know, the truth is, it's the Jets will make Chevy's decision either easy or difficult for him based on how they play in the next five games.
Between
today and next Saturday, it'll be, you know, they play tomorrow, Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. Four games. Jets will make that decision very easy for Kevin Cheveldayoff. By the end of the game next Saturday against the Blues, he'll know what he's going to do.
Winning makes his decision harder, though, Drew.
Winning makes his decision very hard. If they win the next 3 out of 4 or 4 out of 4, then he really needs to think long and hard about what he does with a guy like Jim Slater. Because, you know,
he's not going anywhere. They're not. You guys have been saying this for at least 2 weeks now, and I said this 3 weeks ago. I think the Jets are going to make maybe one, maybe two moves at the deadline, and I think that's max. And the GST line's not going anywhere. At least what I was going to say is, if Patrice Cormier filled in for Tanner Glass, then it could be called the PST line, provincial sales tax. But you know what? They're not going anywhere.
I'll tell you what. Let's leave.
They're not.
It there.
I mean, Tanner Glass and Jim Slater. There might have been an article saying that they haven't negotiated. Those guys are going to get re-signed in the offseason. They're the heart and soul of this team. They're not going anywhere.
Let's
get real here.
Let's leave it there. When we come back after the break, we'll get deeper into the trade deadline. We'll start our trade deadline preview that's going to take us really throughout the rest of the show. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
Ten
10 minutes to 1 o'clock. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. That's Richard Pollock over there. We've sent Ezra Ginsberg to the canteen to get us some soda drinks. He'll be right back. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website, which provides you with all of the latest Winnipeg Jets news, is www.illegalcurve.com. Start talking about the trades that have occurred so far leading up to the February 27th trade deadline. Action sort of got underway February 16th. So Thursday was sort of the first few trades where, you know, sort of the calm before the storm, as it were. At least we hope there's a storm, as we're going to be on for 4 hours on trade deadline day. So hopefully that'll start us off February 27th. Let's start with San Jose acquiring Dominic Moore from the Tampa Bay Lightning, and Dominic Moore in a seventh-round pick in exchange for a second-round pick. You know, Dominic Moore is a guy who seems to get traded at every trade deadline, which I guess is probably a good sign for what he brings to the table.
Yep.
And, you know, we sort of refer to him as a better Jim Slater.
Yeah.
What does he do? Is he just, you know, defensively responsible, well, sort of gritty, that sort of thing?
First off, what we did 2 weeks ago was we said on the show the San Jose Sharks need a third-line center. And so, you know, I think we accurately predicted that, Drew, but I think it was a fairly, fairly obvious hole, glaring hole, and I think Doug Wilson has done well to attend to that issue, and he's addressed it right away. I think what happens there, just quickly, is they have a depth at the middle now,
right?
And you have centers that are able to create offense, Thornton, Couture, guys like that, and then you have your third or fourth line centers being now Dominic Moore, and then you push Michael Hamsies now. Dominic Moore, what he brings to the table, he's a very fast player. He's not a bad stick handler. He's not an offensive dynamo by any means. Not a great shot or anything. He's a fast skater. He can pursue on the forecheck. And more importantly, he can check against other teams' best players. He can win faceoffs and kill penalties. The San Jose Sharks penalty kills 27th overall in the league. He will help that by winning faceoffs. He will help that with his speed and with his hockey sense, and he will be a welcome addition to that squad. He also allows them to push Hanzus down to the fourth line. I know whether they're not want to throw him on the wing at times, but I think what happens is, Drew, you know, when you're a team like Todd McClellan, the San Jose Sharks, you're giving Todd McClellan options. And the option is, well, if you're checking against, you know, you want to match up checking lines, right?
Right.
Or you want to do whatever you want to do in a playoff series, your matchups may change. His first two lines dictate the play because they're so good. You know, Couture, Clough, and then with Havlat coming back, and then, you know, Pavelski, Thornton, and Marlowe. All three guys who can play center, by the way. But what you're doing is you're dictating the pace with those two top lines. Then you get Moore, and then you have Hanzus. Well, say, for example, in the first round you play against a team like, or the second round you're playing against a team like Vancouver, and you want to match up a checking line, and Moore might be a guy you want to put up in a checking line role against the Sedins, although they're not the fastest skaters, right? Or, you know, against a Taves, a guy who can skate and do a lot of things. Or, for example, you know, you're playing the Los Angeles Kings in the first round, and you want to do a matchup, and you say, well, Kopitar isn't the fastest skater, and he's a big guy. Let's match up Hanzus against him.
Sure.
It gives you the option of two checking centers who can both win draws, although Moore's better at winning draws than Hanzus. It gives him more roster flexibility. It gives him a penalty killer. It's a nice addition. Cost you, you know, pretty little in a second-round pick. I like the deal for both squads.
Yeah. Sort of set the market. I mean, by making that deal, I mean, Tampa Bay San Jose has sort of established the market as a second round pick for pretty much any
third liner.
Rental.
And you know what? Doug Wilson, smart to strike early. Steve Yzerman, smart to sell early. Two very, very smart GMs.
Right.
Right.
But what it does for, if you want to relate it back to the Winnipeg Jets, is it says to Kevin Cheveldayoff, okay, Dominic Moore is worth a second-round pick if you decide to put Jim Slater on the block.
That's what he's worth about.
He's probably worth about a second-round pick, which, I mean, it's a low second-round pick when you're dealing with a team like
it was Minnesota's second-round pick, actually.
That's true. It was Minnesota's second-round pick, which makes it a higher second-round pick. I apologize. Just a reasonable acquisition. I mean, I think the stat was 35% of second-round picks that are drafted never make it into the NHL.
Yep.
So, I mean, the cost is not great. Mm-hmm. You get a guy. You know, San Jose is gearing up for a cup run.
Right.
I mean,
They lost to Carolina last night, but that's fine. The San Jose Sharks are going to get that 3 seed because they're going to win the division, the Pacific Division. And the Sharks are competing against the Canucks and the Red Wings and the Hawks, and it's a good acquisition. I mean, we talked about it last week a little bit. Dominic Moore, he had the fine, and he's a gritty player, but Those are the types of players you need. The window has been closing in San Jose, Richie, for a while now, and it's closing and closing and closing even more. We've had Randy Hahn on at least two or three times, and we talk to him about it all the time. It's kind of the running joke when we have Randy Hahn, who's the play-by-play broadcaster for the San Jose Sharks. Every time he's on, we ask him, well, is this the make-or-break year? And it is. It is every year. Because the talent that they have there, when you have the Joe Thorntons and the Patrick Marlowes, and then you've got the young talent coming up with Logan Couture, and Joe Pavelski is probably the future captain of the team, the window is closing. And you have to think that Doug Wilson might want to get one more defenseman, maybe.
We're going to talk about that.
Right?
We'll talk about that coming up.
Because you've got some talent there.
We'll talk
Brent,
about we'll
Brent
talk
Burns that. Is starting to pick it up a little bit. Got another goal yesterday, but you know he hasn't maybe given them enough offense. Dan Boyle's a great defenseman. I still don't think they're elite as far as going to the Cup Finals, but I think they're...
Well, we'll get into San Jose later on in the show.
They were pretty close against Vancouver last year.
We'll talk about San Jose later on. We're talking about the trades that have happened right now.
I want to talk about it now, Drew.
Yeah, clearly you do want to talk about it now.
We made the show plan. Let's do a playoff preview right now.
Okay. Ed, Timmy, cut his mic if you don't mind. Thank you. Philadelphia acquires Nicklas Grossman from the Dallas Stars in exchange for a second-round pick and a third-round pick.
I thought that was kind of high.
I thought that was a little much to give up as well for a guy who's a pure rental also.
The most points Grossman's ever gotten a season is like 10 or something.
The Flyers do, though, have a tendency to sign these guys that they acquire.
Fine. So, I mean...
Was I caught off guard a little bit? Yeah, it was a little bit high. Yeah. Grossman isn't your... Maybe your prototypical...
He's a stay-at-home defenseman.
Right, but he's in your prototypical center rental in that he's younger than most other ones.
Yeah.
So
why is he going to be a UFA so young?
He's been playing in the league.
He's 25. He's 25, I think.
Has he been in the league for 7 years?
He's played with Dallas for 4 or 5 years.
Minimum. Remember, guys, and I'll just pull that up, but remember when they came into the league, Niskanen and Grossman were thought of as you know, building blocks on the Stars back end,
and
it didn't really turn out that way.
Zubov and Sidor.
But you know, Drew is that too much?
He was drafted in 2004. This is
25.
Yeah, 27. No, he's 27.
Oh, 27.
This is, but you know, we're talking about usually rentals. They're 31, 32, and they're going to get. This is a guy and a defenseman who peak a little bit later than forwards. A guy you could sign as your four guy. He could, you know, they have guys who can move the puck like Mezeros, Timonen, Carl.
Yeah,
and obviously they miss Pronger, but what you're trying to do is lock down the defensive role, right? And you have Coburn, but what you do is you add him. He's not too old. He can play tough minutes. He's physical. He's a tough defenseman. I like him. I like the addition. Was it a little bit too much to give up? Sure, but he's worth at least a second rounder. And then you think about, I mean, defensemen are going to play more significant times.
Is that what the market is?
A minimum. And then, so he's worth a second rounder. I mean, we'll talk about Howard Gill in a second here.
Yeah.
Second rounder, and then you get third rounder. Maybe should it have been a fourth? I don't have too much of a problem with the Flyers giving that up for him. I really don't.
Especially if they re-sign him.
Yeah.
I mean, if they re-sign him, then it makes it all the more sense.
Not a factor for Dallas with trading because they don't care if they re-sign him.
But, Drew, this is what I told Richie after I saw that trade. And you know what? Nicklas Grossman, okay, you know, he's 27 years old. We've established that he's a third-pairing defensive defenseman,
He may be a second-pairing guy with a really good offensive guy beside him.
Okay. Okay, so we know that about him. But if he's getting a second-round pick... 2 weeks before the trade deadline.
And a third.
What I told Richie was, is Johnny Oduya going to get two first-round picks? I mean, Johnny Oduya is a better defenseman than Nicklas Grossman. In my opinion.
Not as trustworthy,
they're
different
defensemen.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. They're definitely different.
If you're looking for a guy to make a first pass, if that's what you need, say the Chicago Blackhawks need a guy who can make a good first pass, then Johnny Oduya is worth more to you than Nicklas Grossman.
If you're looking to a guy to also make terrible turnovers.
That's the downside to Johnny Oduya.
They're not turnovers, Richie. They're free pizzas.
Yeah.
And everybody likes free pizza, except when they're turnovers up the middle of the ice.
Well, and I think the also.
Wow, that was a word.
I think the thing is, if, you know, if Kevin Cheveldayoff, if you're obviously tried for a second and a third, now that the market's kind of been set at that. Having said that, I think that you're probably looking at more. We thought I've always said a second. Maybe if you want to stretch it out to a fifth in there as well, okay. But I think a second you'd be happy with.
Last trade that's happened so far, at least of any significance.
Yes.
Yesterday, Hal Gill and a conditional fifth-round pick goes to Nashville. Going to Montreal, Blake Jeffrion.
Blake Boom Boom Jeffrion.
Yeah, Robert Slaney and a second-round pick in 2012.
I know I like the trade for both teams. And you're allowed to do that. I think people sometimes forget, oh, there's a winner and a loser. I think the trade for both teams. I think Montreal does well here. They get a second-rounder for Gill. They trade him early, which I like.
Yeah.
He has a second-rounder for Gill. You get Jeff Drouin, maybe third or fourth line capabilities, not a top end, but an NHL forward.
And he gets to go back to Montreal, which is kind of cool because of his grandfather.
Of course. Right? And his great-grandfather.
Yeah. Pardon me, Howie Morenz?
Howie Morenz is his great-grandfather, and Boom Boom Jeff Drouin is his grandfather.
It's funny because last week we were talking about how you grew up watching Howie Morenz.
That's exactly true, yeah. Well, thank you.
And also, the thing is Jeff Drouin actually, oddly enough, was born in Tennessee. In any event, what you're doing is you're getting
How did that happen?
I don't know. We were actually talking about that yesterday. We're not sure how that happened.
He went to the University of Wisconsin. Blake Jeff Drouin won the Hobey Baker Award.
Did he? Well, I think, Jeff Drouin, you know, they say upside at his fourth, maybe third line. If you can get a third line NHL forward, he's going to be cheap for a few years here. You get a cheap forward, you get a second round pick, and they add Slaney apparently isn't much.
Slaney's an AHL, right. ECHL guy.
You get a second round pick. You know, he's a pending UFA, Gil. I like Montreal did fine there.
In terms Nashville might resign him.
Probably not. In terms of Nat, because if they want to try and sign Suter here and Weber, and if they don't, this is the thing, they want to give their money to those guys, and if they don't give their money to those guys, those guys are gone, and then Gil wants out, right?
Right.
Gil, from the other perspective, Nashville's penalty kill is only 15th overall. It's poor on the road penalty kill. He'll add to the penalty kill.
Yep.
He'll add stability. He had a stay-at-home guy. He's great in the room. He can block shots.
He's great in the playoffs. Remember how good he was for Pittsburgh?
Absolutely. Montreal, play tough ice time.
Yep.
I like the addition for them. It's interesting, though. They still need to add. We're going to talk about that later. They need to add offense because, as we saw last year, their defense can only take them so far.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to we're going to go division by division, team by team, as only we can. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Down 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That's Ezra Ginsberg. That's Richard Pollock. I'm Drew Mindell. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Let's get us to 5,000 followers. We've almost hit the 5,000 mark on Twitter.
Well, if you send out a tweet or something from, you know, Justin Bieber or like about Justin Bieber on our Twitter, we're definitely going to get some spam bots. So that might be a good way to do it. But I wouldn't recommend that. Dave Minuk would not
be. The Queen has her own account. Did you see that?
Yes, we.
She follow us?
She does follow us.
She, he, whatever.
Yeah, the Queen does follow us.
Whatever.
Which makes a lot of sense because I got, you know, we got that tweet at Illegal Curve earlier in the week saying the Queen was going to be at
the
game.
Yeah.
And then I was like, what? And then
I'll say it again. It's been an unbelievable atmosphere at Jets games. The slogan is fueled by passion, and our fans have been awesome. The atmosphere at that game yesterday, every game is good, but those weekend games, unreal.
Yeah, agreed. Let's start, we're going to go team by team, division by division, talking about if they're going to be a buyer or seller at the trade deadline, who they may have to sell, and if they're going to buy, what are their needs? Let's start, in the Southeast Division. We've already gone through the Winnipeg Jets. You know that we think they should sell. We know that, Slade or Glass or Oduya, Wellwood, those are the guys. No. Let's go to the Washington Capitals. Thinking that, the Washington Capitals still have, the impression that they're, really a top contender. The stats don't bear it out. The standings don't bear it out. But you look at their roster and you're like, this team should be a top contender. So we're suspecting they're going to be a buyer come the trade deadline?
I think so, Drew. I think you have to designate them as anything. You have to designate them as a buyer. You can't be selling now. I mean, they have too many. They have pending UFA and Semin. I mean, they have too many question marks coming up into the offseason. I think they have, especially you have Ovechkin in his prime here. You have to be a buyer. If you look at their offense healthy, you wonder, where do they buy? It's a really interesting predicament because they threw in a coach here. The team, to me, I have seen them play numerous times. I'm not sold on them at all. But with pending UFAs and, Dennis Wideman and Knubel and Semin and guys like that, overall, you've brought in guys like Brouwer and Ward. You're trying to go for it. You have to make the playoffs. You have to make the playoffs. Not making the playoffs would be terrible for this organization and their popularity in Washington. I think they have to buy. I think if they're buying anything, I think it's a defenseman.
Well,
the question's with Mike Green.
Mike Green is supposedly back in the lineup tonight.
Maybe he is. And Mike Green's there, and Dennis Wideman's there, and John Carlson's there. And that's a great right side.
Yep.
And you have guys, Carl Olsner. They don't love Jeff Schultz. You have Hamlick. You don't love Jeff Schultz. I think what they try and do is add a real solid stay-at-home left-side defenseman if they can.
A third-pairing defenseman.
Even second-pairing if you want to bump guy like Hammerlick down. I think a solid left side stay-at-home defenseman. I mean, do you want to trust Orlov in that role? I mean, you already have, if you get Green back, you have enough offense in Green, in Weidman, in Carlson. You know, you have a lockdown, quote-unquote, guy like Alzner. Hamrick's seen better days. Schultz, they don't love, and, you know, he's not a lockdown guy, you know, quote-unquote. A lockdown left side defenseman is probably something that they're interested in.
At any point in time, do you consider trading Alex Semin before next Monday? A UFA after the season?
You always consider it, depending on what the offers are.
Would they have to? I mean, you know, we're speculating that they're a buyer, but I mean,
yes, I don't think they're a seller, Drew.
You hold on to Alex Semin and you expect that you're going to lose him at the deadline.
If you held on to them this long, you have to hold on to him now.
Yeah, even though, I mean, is there any market for him at a $6.7 million price tag?
Well, penny UFA for sure, market for him.
Right. I mean, because he's got all the talent in the world. He's just, you know, for whatever reason, hasn't been able to, you know.
This year has been especially bad, but overall, I mean, he's a guy who could explode. Maybe he is what he is at this point, but that's not necessarily a bad thing, being a 30-goal scorer, perennial 30-goal scorer. I think they're a buyer, though.
Tampa Bay already seems as though they've put the for sale sign up, especially with the Dominic Moore trade. Other guys, you have Ryan Shannon listed here, Pavel Kubina, Ryan Malone, Matt Gilroy,
Brett Clark, Adam Hall.
Yeah.
All of them. We put together a spreadsheet here, so we're referring to the same spreadsheet.
Yeah.
All of these guys, Ryan Shannon's, you know, a fourth line guy, right hand, a little bit of offensive capabilities.
He's bounced around from team to team. Yeah. Been on three or four teams.
Adam Hall is a big guy, not a great skater, a good slap shot. He did play a nice role for them.
Maybe Pittsburgh want to bring him back or make a move. Yeah,
fourth line role.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. Tampa Bay, I don't see. Ryan Malone is a guy. Another guy that also came from Pittsburgh.
Is his salary making prohibitive?
I tell you what I see. Ryan Malone, yeah, definitely.
$4.5 million for another 3 years.
Isn't his pay less, though, than his cap hit? You want to check that?
I can check that.
I think Matt Gilroy is a liability defensively. He can move the puck. I actually think Brett Clark is a guy who would fit what Washington needs.
And he's been on Washington before, correct?
Has he?
No.
That was Colorado.
Maybe not.
A left-handed defenseman.
Yeah, I don't think
play
so,
the left side as a strong defensive defenseman. He's not great. He has his time. He can move the puck a bit. He'd be a nice addition for Washington. Kubina is a guy who will go somewhere. Doesn't have the best hockey sense. Can move the puck pretty well. Got a hard shot. He's very slow. He was always slow, but he's slowed down even more. I think Kubina, if he goes to a team, needs to go into a role where he's the right side sixth defenseman. On a team, 5-6 defenseman on a team.
You are right about Ryan Malone. Ryan Malone, his cap hit is $4.5 million for the next 3 years, but next year he makes $3 million, and then the 2 years after that, it's only $2.5 million in actual cash payout.
So if you're not close to the cap, maybe that's a guy you are willing to take. That's not an unreasonable number for a guy.
No, you know.
A big guy, you can add playoff size. I mean, there are teams that can use a player like that.
Yeah, and you know what, Richie? You know, there's been a lot of talk, and I know we're going to get to this when we get to the Western Conference and we get to the Columbus Blue Jackets. A lot of talk about Jeff Carter and Rick Nash, possibly one of those two guys going to L.A. And Jeff Carter specifically.
So I think their names are over and rated.
No, but Carter because of his history with Richards and Nash because he would be that guy that L.A., you know, maybe bump them ahead. I think that this is being overblown big time. But a guy like Ryan Malone might be a little bit better of a piece for L.A., but I think that we are getting into a bit of an issue with guys that are going to be moved. And there are guys that need to be moved because of their UFA status. But a guy like Ryan Malone, Drew, to answer your question, I think it is a bit prohibitive. Because you've got a guy that's going to be making $3 million a year. And if he goes back to Pittsburgh, what role is he going to play? And I think that, when you think of what his skill set is, he hasn't had a very good offensive season. But he's a guy that he's a power forward. So maybe a couple of those guys will move. But is there a market for Adam Hall and Ryan Malone? Because they're complementary pieces on a team that's already established, right? Those are buy players.
Malone's more complex than a guy like Hall. You throw fourth line right winger,
right?
I mean, Ryan Malone can play. Yeah, I mean, he's more than just a throw in depth.
The cap hit's always a factor too, right?
Well, it's got to be a team that can absorb it without having to pay out a lot of. And
it's not just
cash.
This year. I mean, it cuts into your cap room the next year and the year after, even if you're not paying him it, right?
It's another 3 years, exactly right. Carolina Hurricanes, Yark. If I hear any more about Tua Marutu, I've heard enough of her already. Yaroslav Spachek, we expect to go, and Brian Allen as well.
All I'm going, Spachek is a guy you want to...
Are you sure that Rutu's going to go, though? Rutherford...
He's on the list of going if he doesn't sign. If he doesn't sign, he'll go, and he'll go for a nice package.
Well, if you're Jim Rutherford, do you sign him or do you trade him at this point?
Depends on how much you're offering him. And I don't know what the negotiations are, but if you're offering a reasonable salary, doesn't take it, you deal him. If he signs, you keep him.
This is my question, and it's not about Tuomo Ruutu specifically, but I've talked about this on the morning show this week. If you...
You're on the morning show?
I was on the morning show, believe it or not. Why, if you're a general manager in the NHL, why don't you trade a guy when he's got value and then tell him before he's out the door, we're going to make a legitimate effort to try and re-sign you? You never see it happen.
Well, Gary and has talked about this in their show, and Gary made a good point. What if a guy goes and he finds a place that he likes, and there's that risk? Look, the other risk is there's many other competing teams with it.
Yeah.
There's many factors here that go into that, and what's other people going to be offering? And you have him now. You have your opportunity. That's why the Flyers trade for these guys right before July 1st, because they have that window of they're the only team offering.
Sure.
They're not whining and dining. So, I mean,
they're not whining and dining in a competitive market.
That's right.
I mean,
you overpay a lot of times when you do that.
Fair enough.
Now, Brian Allen and Spatchuk is guys I want to talk about. Spatchuk will play a third pairing role. What you can do for the Arsenal Spatchuk guys, he's getting in his late 30s now. He's a fifth or sixth defenseman. So he's your third pairing left side defenseman who can play second line power, second unit power play time, has a really good one-timer on the right side. He's a guy who can move the puck out of his own zone, not great defensively. He has a market. Brian Allen is a limited offensive player. He's more of a solid defensive defenseman. You can put him at your fourth slot, but he'd be overmatched consistently in that role. He's a solid stay-at-home guy. He'll be physical. He can do the little things. But again, he's a third pairing defenseman. But definitely a solid third pairing defenseman, especially on a team trying to make a run. Because as Vancouver demonstrated last year, defensive depth is of vital importance to a long sustainable playoff run.
Yeah, the two things teams are looking for as they gear up. I mean, it's a copycat league, so the trends nowadays are depth up the middle and depth on defense.
And we've talked about Washington, Richie, and what I keep going back to is I really like the way. I like a few teams in the West, but the teams that I really like are Chicago, Vancouver, and Detroit. And I think Detroit, there's been some rumors what they might do, but a team like Chicago.
Why are we talking about Chicago?
Well, I know. We're talking about where those guys could go, a Yaro Spotcheck or a Brian Allen, and a team like Chicago, or maybe even Detroit, even though Jakob Kindle's kind of filled that role.
Well, yeah.
But maybe they will go to one of those teams. But I think it's funny. I mean, We've been hearing about the trade deadline for a long time now, and it is fun, and I know fans like it. But whenever there's a buyer, everyone says, these guys are going to be, this team's going to be buyers. And, yeah, that's accurate to a certain degree, but you can't buy anything that and nobody else, sorry, you can't sell anything that no one else is buying. And so, yes, that you might shop around a Brian Allen or a Yaro Spotcheck, but it has to serve a purpose. I think we're going to see less trades than last year.
Oh, no, I disagree.
I hope you're wrong, Ezra.
I disagree, Ezra.
Why?
I disagree.
Because we're going to be on for 4 hours.
Well, that's fine. You can still analyze trades. I'm not saying there's going to be two trades.
I disagree.
I don't think there's going to be 30.
I disagree.
Hey, do you want to put it on the line? Okay, hold on. How about this?
No, hold on. This is more money
for charity.
No,
more money
bets.
For charity.
It waters
hold
down.
On. You don't want to give more money to charity?
Be quiet. It waters down the initial.
Are you anti-charity?
Okay, quickly,
let's go to the next. As you know,
there will be less trades than last year.
Okay, you're
fine.
Put it on the board.
Okay, it will be wrong. That. Florida quickly.
Florida Panthers. You say stand pat. And why aren't they buying?
Because you know what, Drew? They have a long-term plan here, and that's to draft, and that's to nurture their young players, the Quentin Howdens, the
McFarlands.
I mean, obviously they're elevating Goodbrinson now because of their injuries and such, but you have these guys signed for these four-year deals. You ride them out. You go to the playoffs. If you can win the division, you see what you can get. You don't buy. If it costs you very little to get a better goalie, maybe. But you don't give up any young players. You don't give up any draft picks. This is a long-term thing. So to me, they stand pat. They ride with what they have, and they see how far they can go.
If they're riding what they have, then that's going to be a first-round exit.
It will be. But I wouldn't mortgage the future to try and make that miraculous first-round win and then second-round exit.
They're overachieving this year, let's be honest.
They are.
Well, they're playing in a terrible division. That's what's happening.
That's true.
The division's underachieving and they're overachieving.
Well, division might be what it is.
The Caps have underachieved this year. Let's not joke around here.
But I think Florida will be a team to watch. I think they'll be interesting because I think there's going to be some pressure on ownership, pressure by ownership to maybe make a deal or two.
Remus wants to be let in.
Oh, well, then why don't we go to break and we'll let Remus in?
But we give Ezzy a lot of flack.
We'll give Remus some flack when he comes back. Exactly.
I'll be here.
Timmy, let's
go to break.
I will
be here next weekend, 7 a.m., 6:45 for Gary.
When we come back, we're going to talk about the Northeast Division. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Looking for something to do tonight? No Jets game? Definitely check out Rumors. Two great shows, 7:45 and 10:30. Some top-notch comedy at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Continuing with our division-by-division, team-by-team breakdown, we go to the Northeast Division. Based on their Hal Gill trade of yesterday, the Montreal Canadiens have definitely hung up the for sale sign.
Yep.
Kostitsyn, Moen, Gomez, Campoli. Really? Gomez?
Well, he's on this. Well, they're trying to sell him.
Yeah, who's crazy enough to...
No, nobody is, but they're going to try and sell him. Moen is a guy who's going to generate a lot of interest.
Right.
And he's a guy who can play, you know, third, fourth line, probably third line, left wing side, not good offensively, can up and down, can hit, can penalty kill, great checker. Obviously, with the Anaheim days, even Montreal, he's been really good there in terms of a checking role. Already been through San Jose once. In terms of a rental from Anaheim?
Very briefly, yeah.
But he would look really nice on the left side right beside Dominic Moore or Michael Hounds, who's there on their third or fourth lines, can kill penalties again. They have poor penalty killing. I can see a fit there. I can see a fit with him on a lot of teams. And I see a market for him that'll generate something of a...
Similar to the Moore deal, yeah.
Yeah, second, third.
Yep.
Gomez will try and sell. Nobody want him. Campoli, I don't really see the value in him. That maybe some other teams do. I don't
it's
see
a guy
him.
Who's been traded for a second-round pick for a couple of straight years at the trade deadline.
I don't see him as a top six guy.
Well, the thing is, with Chris Campoli is, I believe he broke in with the Islanders. He's an American defenseman. Yep. And the thing is, teams have shown the tendency to take a risk on him, thinking that that he's going to give them a little bit more offense. And he was on Chicago and Ottawa, and it hasn't worked out. So I think
I don't see him as a top six guy.
Chris Campoli might not get that much action. But, yeah, I would.
I don't mind him as a seven.
I would agree with Travis Moen and Scott Gomez. It's nice that he's got a couple goals now. You guys know that I love Scott Gomez, and he's had a really rough year, and actually really rough couple years after he had the good year in New York.
Been terrible.
He's probably not going to go anywhere.
He can't go anywhere.
So it's Travis Moen. Hal Gill was the big guy, literally, and the next guy is Travis Moen. When I think of Travis Moen, I think of that year when they won the Cup, and he was on that line with Sammy Paulson and Rob Niedermeyer. Yeah, I think he'll be very beneficial to another team, and we're talking about the Vancouvers, the Detroits, the Chicagos, those teams, even maybe an L.A. that gets in there, or a Nashville. Yeah, you're right. Out of all the players out there, it's funny, a lot of people, again, are fixating on the big names, but how often is a big name moved at the trade deadline again?
Not often.
You can count them on one hand.
It's usually depth players, you're right about that.
Kostitsyn is an interesting one.
Well, I was going to talk about Kostitsyn, because he's the most talented.
Maybe he'll go to Nashville, join his brother.
He's the most talented of all those guys.
That's actually an interesting possibility that he just tossed out there.
Well, let's talk about that.
Well, at Nashville needs scoring. They took Sergei Kostitsyn for, 10 cents on the dollar. Kostitsyn's not going to garner too much interest. I think there's some attitude issues and things like that. But he's a talent, and he's a scorer, and Nashville needs a scorer, and they'll give up the pick necessary to get him, I think. I know they just dealt that second rounder and some prospects, and maybe, the other argument on the other side would be, well, if they wanted him, why wouldn't they package him in the Guild deal? Maybe they decide they want him after, but he's a guy who can score, and there aren't that many of them. I know his point total doesn't necessarily reflect that, but... a questionable guy like that, what you're not necessarily sure where you can get, is probably more of a third rounder at the deadline, I think.
It's not going to cost you a lot.
Remember, the Habs, if they keep making this crazy run.
Well, everybody's always in it, but once they traded Gill, that was the sign.
I think Kostitsyn's going.
Well, if you look at the Western Conference, and I know we're on the East right now, but we're talking about the Habs and who they could possibly give up. If you look at the Western Conference, Nashville and L.A., they have to get somebody in there. And I know that everyone's throwing out the Nash, but Andre Kostitsyn goes to Nashville. He almost becomes one of your top offensive players. I mean, they're scoring by committee team. Nashville gets by getting goals basically from anyone, and they do it very well. Yep. But, yeah, Andre Kostitsyn has to go. I don't think he's part of the long-term plans there. I think there was a question if he was going to be part of the long-term plans worked out.
He's a rental, undoubtedly.
Yep.
Another team that's going to be very interesting at the deadline is the Toronto Maple Leafs. I mean, just by the nature of them being Toronto, they're involved in every trade rumor that ever existed. They want to get a big scoring winger or a big scoring center.
I mean, does everybody.
Who doesn't? Very true. And the guys that we've heard bandied about, Shen, MacArthur, Komisarek, Maybe Grabowski. I mean, I think you're in tough to trade Grabowski.
Well, the question is, Shen, sure, they're healthy scratching him these days. I mean, what's his value? We've talked about it.
What happened there?
I think it's maxed out. I think he's always been a fourth defenseman maxed out, and I think that's what he's probably going to be, and Brian Brick maybe took a while to realize that.
He's 21 years old.
Well, but I mean, you can see the talent on the ice and what it's going to be, Ezzy. I mean, you can't teach the guy.
I almost feel like they've burned him out there.
Maybe they have.
Yeah,
but
typical.
In any event, Komisarek is basically an untradeable contract. MacArthur is, to me, a little bit overpaid, and the Grabowski is the most interesting one.
Right.
Because you gave Lyles the money. You got to give Grabowski the money. If you're not going to give him the money, because he's at least a top six center, you know, first or second, probably a good second line center on a good team, he's, to me, the key here. If he doesn't sign and they're worried about losing him, maybe they use him in a big package to get one of those big centers or big wingers. That's interesting because they need a big center, a big scoring winger, one of those two. Obviously, everybody does, but I think that's what they're going to try and address.
But how can they package Grabowski if he's a UFA and get a real name?
Well, he'd have to be part of a huge package, though, I'm saying.
Yeah, and that huge package is, and I don't want to say it, but for Toronto, a first-round pick. They don't have anybody to...
Absolutely.
They don't have... They
You're
don't,
right,
they cannot... They
right.
Let's be honest. Toronto isn't in a bad position... To me, at the trade deadline, is in a bad position. Good position playoff-wise. Toronto, another team. You could argue if they've overachieved or not, but Kessel and Leupold have been terrific. You cannot take that away from them. That line with Bozak has been unreal. And Toronto's been in the playoffs almost the whole year, and they've slipped a little bit and gone up a little bit. But now they're in eighth spot, and they're clinging on to that eighth spot, really, with Washington breathing down their necks. But really, look at the players when you look at the players they're considering trading. Yeah. Those guys have done nothing but perform up to the contract they have. Clark MacArthur and Mikhail Grabowski, these are guys that are having their best seasons ever on Toronto.
If Brian Burke makes a serious move here, is he selfish in thinking this team is really anything but a one and done?
We said that their plan has always been flawed, so let's see what they do here first.
Fair enough. Ottawa, currently in seventh place in the Eastern Conference, unexpectedly in seventh place, struggling as of late, but they're still holding on to that spot.
It's a long-term goal here.
Similar to Florida in the long term.
They're closer, obviously, but Brian Murray knows, and he's commented, you know, that they're not going to trade like a Runblad and a pick for Turris is a long-term trade, too. I don't see them doing anything. I see them going to try and ride it out with Paul McLean, see what he can do, but the young talent on this team just needs to continue to grow, and there's no reason for them to be buying anything.
And if they get any home playoff dates in the postseason, it's a bonus anyway, right. They were never expected to be there.
Right. I'd have to agree with that. When you look at their team, why would they make any moves? They've picked up Kyle Turris. And they're relatively healthy. Yeah. Erik Karlsson is having a Norris season. Goaltending's fine.
Well, Anderson's going to wear down, but yeah, it's fine.
It's fine.
It's fine for this year.
Yeah, exactly.
No. I don't love Anderson, but he's solid. And then they have Robin Lehner in the system. They're looking good for the future.
Right, so I'm saying.
He's going to wear down. He's going to play 70-something games. But
yeah. Buffalo, probably the most disappointing team in the NHL this year.
Last in the East right now, Drew.
Last in the East. Dead last.
That's an understatement.
That's crazy.
Well, people are picking them to win the Cup this year.
Absolutely.
Well, and now said they were disappointing. I mean, Paul Gostad.
You could have said extremely disappointing.
Thank you. Paul Gostad. Hecht.
Yeah.
Well, Hecht has been with the Sabres. Actually, both Hecht and Gostad have been with the Sabres their whole careers.
No, Hecht was St. Louis, then Edmonton, and then Buffalo.
Wasn't he with San Jose at some point?
He's been with Buffalo for a while, though.
I think 10 years. I believe he was drafted by St. Louis and went to Edmonton in the Brewer deal? Was it Pronger?
Hecht was never on.
I'll look it up.
You're thinking of somebody else.
And then Hecht went to Buffalo in the summer 1 year for a second rounder, I believe is what it was. I don't remember if that's correct or not. In any event.
Yeah, St. Louis to Edmonton to Buffalo, and yeah, he's been there ever since.
So, I mean, overall, Drew, I think Gostad is the one who's going to... Now, Boyes is a guy who's not the best skater. He's a scorer on a team, you know, probably a second-line scorer if he finds his game back. Again, not a great skater, good shot. You got to take a chance on him. Probably worth taking a chance if you're a team that really can't score much and you don't need speed. Gostad is a guy who can play tough minutes, penalty kill, big guy. Wins face-offs, good defensively. He's a guy who will for sure draw an interest. If Buffalo intends on contending next year, they might want to look at considering re-signing Gostad. And then Hecht, is Hecht healthy? I think he just got back, didn't he?
I believe so, yeah.
And Hecht's the guy who's going to be a third-line role, he's going to do the little things.
No, he's on. He's had a concussion, he's on IR.
Okay, so he's not. So, I mean, that's probably something he's not going to move then, if that's the case.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, he's 34 years old, he's been in the league forever at this point in time. Not going to have a huge value for him anyways. But Gostad's the most interesting of all those names, like you said.
And let's do the last one here.
Yeah, the last team in the... that's the Boston Bruins. We saw them last night. Definitely a buyer as they're up at the top of the Eastern Conference. A scoring right winger and a puck-moving defenseman.
Yes. You know, Drew, scoring right winger is because, well, they just lost Peverly, but Horton's the one with the concussion and the setback.
Sure.
Their left side is strong with Marchand and Lucic. The right side, right now, you know, they've put Lucic on the right side, excuse me, now because of the injury with Horton. Pouliot's there. They ideally want to throw Lucic back on the left side. They have Sagan playing the right side, natural center. They need another right winger. They need another right winger who can score. They have a lot of centers playing out of position on their team, which is fine. It's easier to make that adjustment than the other way around from wing to center. But they need a scoring right winger, and I think that they should address that because this team isn't a team that has a 100-point score. So you need to be scoring by committee, you know, 50, 60-point committee, but still committee. And a right side score would help them. In terms of defense, you know, they did have Caberly last year. He didn't play great. I don't love Joe Corvo. Would they like another defenseman there? Move the puck a bit? I think that'd probably be something they'd be interested in. And then you can pick and choose what you want with your matchups and who you're playing against in the playoffs. Nothing crazy, but a guy who can move the puck, somebody on the cheap.
Yeah, and their roster is so similar to last year. Yeah.
And they have a lot of cap room also.
A lot of cap room. No Caberle, but Corvo has replaced Caberle, and then Recchi retired. But last night, Jordan Caron got a goal. It's good for him. He's a young guy. He's only 21 years old. And then they had Josh Hennessy in there for his first game. But yeah, they'll look to get one complimentary winger. But again, Boston's another team, I guess, you could, a lot better than Ottawa, but another team, they're looking for, they'll make the move if that's really going to be an improvement. But even though the Jets won last night, just watching Boston, this team is just a powerhouse. And I say that, like, starting with in goal and right out. And you know, even a guy like Benoit Pouliot, even though, you know, you don't want him on your first line, he's only there because Horton's injured.
He's overrated. He scores nice goals, and that's about it.
Yeah, but that's a concern. So probably the move they make, I bet, you know, once they make that move, if it's before the trade deadline, or Richie, or after the trade deadline, I bet it'll be a pretty smart move, because this is another team this is another good shot at winning the second cup. I mean, there's no reason to believe.
You need a little more scoring there, though, if you lose Horton, because look how important Horton was in the playoffs.
I agree.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
And Peverly, too. I mean, he's going to come back for then. But by the way,
Peverly's out 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, Hecht was traded for in 2001 in the Doug Waite deal. So I was a little bit advanced. And then he did get traded to Buffalo for not only one second-round pick, but two.
Well, I don't think he'll quite garner that same return this year.
He hasn't been there for 10 years.
If they end up grading him. When we come back after this break, we're going to go to the Atlantic Division, going team by team, division by division.
We're going to Craig Custance at the break?
Oh, I'm sorry. Craig Custance of ESPN is coming up next. My apologies. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.